Studio, the podcast for writers and all who are interested in books, literature, and the printed word. Write on Audio is the weekly companion podcast of Write On Magazine and the Write On suite of publications from Pen to Print. Subscribe by searching Pen to Print in your favourite podcast app to have new editions delivered to you each week. Write On Audio interviews, inspiring you to write by sharing the experience of prominent authors. This month's interview is with poet and novelist Brian Bilston. Brian Bilston has been described as the Banksy of poetry. He won the 2015 Great British Write-Off Poetry Prize for a poem disguised in a Venn diagram. His first published work, You Took the Last Bus Home, was published by Unbound. His novel, Diary of a Somebody, was published to much critical acclaim in 2020. The interviewer is Ethna Cullen, who was alongside Write On editor Madeline White.
Lovely to see you again, Brian. I'm so taken by what I read on social media every day and meeting or seeing you read as well. I've got just a few questions to pile at you, and otherwise you can tell me whatever you like. Maybe what Madeline just said about your anonymity, your lack of... I've found a quote that said...
Yeah.
That calls you the shy poet shrouded in smunk. Is that how you like to see yourself?
Well, I am quite shy, it must be said. It's always a constant source of bemusement to me that I should be going out and about reading poems in front of real people now, because, I think when I did start off sharing poems, I did love to hide behind this sort of, cloak of anonymity. It was a big help to someone who is naturally rather shy and underconfident to have that kind of pseudonym behind whom I could hide, pretend it was somebody else doing all this rather than me.
It's funny because you say you're shy, you're underconfident, but what gives you the confidence to put your poems on Facebook and Twitter? When I first started writing, I like hid everything. Whereas now, I think that's a huge confidence, especially putting it on Twitter and then putting it on Facebook. So you know it's going to get passed around the world. So what gives you that confidence?
Well, it's strange in some ways. I do feel almost less confident now than I did earlier, because I think the issue now is that there are quite a few people who follow me on social media. So when I started, obviously there were very few people that were following me, and certainly nobody in real life that I knew. And so I felt like I didn't have the same kind of barriers to posting up poems, because the chances were that nobody was ever going to kind of come across them or read them. I was simply doing it almost for my own kind of, benefit and pleasure in terms of writing something and then feeling like you published it. But in some ways, it has become now increasingly hard to do that. And I do worry a lot more about posting poems up than I used to, partly because social media is always, the people on social media are always very quick to point out whether there's a typo in your poem, which, I've been guilty on many occasions, but if there's, if they have some kind of problem with it. And I guess kind of following on from that, I have been always very keen to interact with people online, and that's become increasingly difficult to do the more followers I've had. I could spend my whole day just chatting to people on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
And why not?
It's very nice, but it's almost like I can feel I might have something else to do too.
But I have other things that you want to get on with. I'm going to just talk about today's poem. This isn't in the plan, Madeline. I'm an ex-teacher, and I'm a member of a poetry group. Are you a member of a poetry group?
No.
But in Diary of a Somebody, your poetry group is brilliant. It's just so realistic. Apart from, I've forgotten his name. What's the arch enemy? Robin?
Toby Salt.
Toby Salt, yes.
Yeah.
So you're not a... So you're only share... Because, I mean, when I'm in my poetry group, you bring your poem, it's that kind of kill your babies, you put it on the table and everyone takes it apart in the nicest possible way sometimes. So it's a bit different, it's more intimate. I really enjoyed those interactions in the poetry group where you know, someone turns up without a poem and then they still get ripped to pieces for their limerick or whatever it was. I digress.
I made all of that. Yeah, I mean, I've never had an experience of poetry groups or writing groups for that matter. And I had one evening before I had to do my very first kind of performance as Brian, where I did find some kind of local poetry night that was going on. And I thought it might be good before I get on stage, when I have to go on stage for an hour reading my stuff, to actually just try to go on stage for 5 minutes and read two poems. And I found the whole thing quite terrifying, being up there with other poets kind of, you know, looking on like that. Anyway, I felt like, even though I've not been to one of those, I felt like I understood the different kinds of poets that maybe kind of exist out there.
I was going to say, because what came up in the poem today, two things. One of my friends brought a poem which was about not making a living from poetry, which we'll come on to, and talked about, you know, you perform in front of other poets and they say through gritted teeth how much they like your work. So I thought that was quite good. And also we had another poem, which was a really simple one about a child going down a slide. And at the end of our 6 minute discussion, the guy who wrote it said, yes, it's a metaphor for death, which I thought was hilarious. So you even though you don't go to poetry groups, you know all the tropes, the types. You talked about different poets. Do you see yourself as different from other poets?
Well,
I know you did a scathing one about people like me that don't rhyme and go for form and things.
Oh no! I would be scathing because I feel like I'm very receptive to all kinds of different poetry. And although my own style probably has kind of humour at its centre, I don't. The kinds of poetry I read and enjoy is quite wide and varied. And I suppose I don't really think poetry is just one thing at all. It's a very kind of broad church that, to my mind, covers anything from sort of, you know, high lyricism to very kind of, you know, abstract, difficult poetry and, you know, pop and rap lyrics, all sorts of things. And actually, people do get hung up on the idea, you know, is that a poem? Have you whatever it is you produce, you know, that's not a poem, mate, because it doesn't rhyme or it rhymes. I'm just simply not interested in that, really. And I mean, I call things I've done poems. Might they be in a kind of very technical sense? I don't know. I don't really care for that matter.
No, it's a nice. I was once let off the hook by someone said, oh, it must be a poem because it's lineated. So that's like my, of course it's a poem. I've gone to the trouble of setting it out this particular way.
Hmm.
Okay, well, you started off there. I mean, you talked about starting performing, but just go back a step. When and how did you start writing? What started you writing?
Well, I suppose I've been writing in my spare time in a few kind of stolen moments for, I don't know, 10, 15 years, but nothing serious and nothing that I ever kind of shared with anyone. It was mainly for my own amusement to have some, you know, kind of fun with words. And I remember kind of coming across some of those kind of older poems not long ago, sort of buried deep on my kind of hard drive somewhere. And so I've always been sort of interested in that, but it wasn't really until I joined Twitter. And then actually probably not for another year or two, having joined Twitter, that I started to share some of the poems that I've been writing. And I think like a lot of people who joined Twitter, I originally kind of joined it just to understand what it was about. I'd hear people talking about it at work. Mm-hmm. And also just to kind of make bad jokes. And I think I realized after a while that if I could somehow incorporate my bad jokes into a poem, then there was quite good fun to be had from going down that route.
And you don't have to keep telling them to the same people over and over again.
Yes.
I must tell my brother. So moving from bad jokes to good poems. And I mean, I'm astonished at how the range of subject matter you managed to cover. I was going to ask you just a straightforward, where do you get your ideas from question?
Yes, I mean, currently nowhere. I think it's like you know, a few issues in being quite as productive as I would like. But I do, you know, I guess I get my prompts from lots of different places. I do find it helpful to be out and about in the world and doing things and interacting with people. And often when I'm out and about, I'll hear somebody, there'll be a word or I'll see something, or I'll just be, you know, waiting to cross the road and something will pop into my head. That sort of being out there in the world is really helpful for a prompt. But also I find often when I'm most productive, it's when I've got like an overall scheme in mind for my poems. And so that's why, you know, my last book, Days Like These, which has this poem for every structure of a poem for every day of the year, and each poem links into something significant about that day. That was really helpful for me to kind of write in that way, because in effect I had a kind of pool of things I could possibly write about, and it really made me settle, kind of hone in on something and sit down and have to write it. Because what I find difficult is just going to my desk each day with no kind of real ideas and like sitting there and thinking, right, I need an idea and I need to write on that idea. I need to have some kind of prompt or structure. And if, in fact, when I joined Twitter, that was one of the helpful things about it. I would look and see what were the things that were trending, for instance. You know, think there might be things currently in the news, or they might be, you know, celebrating Penguin Awareness Day, all those kind of things I wasn't aware of till I was on social media. And I think, oh, that's a good idea to, you know, for a poem, and I'll get cracking with that. So I find that kind of external stimuli very, very kind of important.
Yeah. It's interesting what you said. I've just mentioned I was a teacher. I was an English teacher, and something that I call the fear of the blank page. This is probably not relevant now, but I found boys were much more scared to start. So we used to give up scaffolding and sentence starters and all that kind of thing. I'm just generalizing in the boys I taught. I'm not saying it's a scientific research, but you know, you give a kid a blank page and they're like, what do I do with it? But when you put up a blank document on your screen, I spend a lot of time at the moment reorganizing my files, because that's much easier than actually writing. So
it's amazing the things you can find to procrastinate with. It really is. And I'm just saying, what I think what is most helpful for me is ending the day with an idea so that I can start the next one. You know, although I might have a blank page in front of me, I kind of know the thing I want to write about. But when I've done, you know, some of the collections I've done in the past have had a kind of overarching kind of theme, like Alexa, What Is There to Know About Love. This is partly from my agent. She suggested a book of kind of love poems. And although it's got poems in there which aren't about love, again, that was quite helpful, because I got maybe kind of think, well, what are the different? I mean, some of those are more personal, but also I was quite keen to kind of think about, well, what are the different kinds of love that are out there? Mm-hmm. What are the different approaches? So maybe kind of think, well, maybe I could look at love through time, kind of love through history, and different and then different kinds of love, or, you know, unrequited love or platonic love, and those kind of things. And so I'd have a kind of list of themes or topics that I wanted to approach, which is really good to have that kind of starting point.
And it's interesting, I would find this impossible, because I'd have a brilliant idea and then go to bed and forget it in the night. I tend to wake up with my ideas in my head, so big respect for you on that one. And you talked about having an agent. I know for people who read our magazine and people involved with the magazine, that's something they'd be quite interested in. How did you come to get an agent?
I think my story is quite untypical, unfortunately, because I was writing, and I was really just writing my spare time and just to keep myself amused. And so I didn't. So pretty much everything that's happened to me on the writing front has not really been kind of sought after. And things have just come to me. So I don't think my experience is very typical, but because I was sharing poems on social media and people were starting to get interested in those, and I was getting more followers, First of all, I started then having a few publishers coming to me, seeing if I wanted to, seeing if I was interested in gathering those up and publishing them more kind of formally in print. And then I think I had my first book out, having done that. And then I got approached by actually a couple of agents who didn't really do poetry before, but I think they could see how it was taking off. And I hadn't really thought about the world of an agent. I was still working in an office, still had a different career. But it was the experience of having an agent has been a very helpful one, obviously for the obvious reason that they can help push the things you do to publishers, mm-hmm. and do all that sort of negotiation. But also she's been very good in terms of getting me to think about me as a writer and being perhaps more ambitious than I might have been otherwise. Because again, this was just a sort of harmless preoccupation of mine going on in the background. But she was the one, for instance, who said, collections of poetry are great, and I'm sure we can do well with those, but have you kind of thought about branching out to other areas? And so that was the idea for The Diary of Somebody, which had just got poems in it, but that is actually a kind of novel.
Yeah.
And that was really my agent that planted that idea in my head. Again, I'd had no thoughts about writing fiction until that point.
And I want to talk about Diary of Somebody because I loved it. Was Mr. Pooter in your head all the time, or was it just...
Well, shockingly, I have to admit, I didn't read Diary of a Nobody until after I'd written Diary of Somebody.
I can't believe it. I really can't.
No, it's true. I was aware of that book, and
I thought it was one of those books like Cold Comfort Balm that everyone's read.
Well, I thought I probably should read it, having then given the book. That's we were having lots of back and forth over the title, and I think Diary of Somebody was like halfway down the list of possible options which I'd come up with, and it was just another title on there. And then my agent really liked it, so all of a sudden it was called that, and then I suddenly thought, well, I know I'm going to be asked about Diary of a Nobody. It's about time I read it. I've always meant to, and so that kind of came afterwards.
How did you feel afterwards? Did you see where I would, because I was reading bits out to my husband and going, this is Pooter all over again, although, you know, not Victorian and, you know, all that kind of thing. But
yeah, it's funny. I did recognize that whole sort of tone, that sort of partly uncomfortable mix of being self-aware yet entirely unself-aware.
That is spot on.
Yeah, I feel like I suppose that's a sort of comic trope that appears, you know, across a whole bunch of different people. To be honest, my inspiration behind the diary was far more the secret diary of Adrian Mole, which was gave me the idea. Yeah,
I think you acknowledged it in the somewhere in the book, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I did. Yeah,
yeah, and I think, you know, I think you're probably not that dissimilar in age from me. It's something that was kind of there when we were looking at things to read when we were getting older, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's right. I was, actually, after my agent said, well, you know, you should be more ambitious, I think it was that maybe there was some anniversary popped up that maybe in real life Adrian Mole would have been 50 or something like that. And all of a sudden I thought, oh yes, I remember those books. What a joy they were. And I kind of reread them, and that's what got me into writing the diary.
And she's such a good writer as well, isn't she? She's just
so funny, and just it's the observations, but also just the kind of precision of, I think, because the comic writing, the thing is all about the timing. You know, when the word, you know, certain words or certain lines kind of land.
And of course, in poetry as well, that's the whole weight of it, isn't it? What you hold back and what you drop.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Now, I was going to ask you another question, which is very current. I think you're doing more dates than Bruce Springsteen on your tour, are you?
Yes, maybe to slightly smaller arenas, it must be said.
How did that kick up? Because when I saw you come into the trades hall, I just assumed that was like a kind of a one-off, and then suddenly there's this tour going on which just kept expanding and expanding.
Yes, no, that's it's a little bit of a surprise to me, but it's I think it's a welcome one in that, you know, I've been doing events now for a few years, mainly tied in around particular books and mainly tied in with a literary festival or in a bookshop. And so I've kind of got used to reading my poems and all that. And anyway, I got a bit like the situation with getting my publisher and my agent. I then also got approached by an events company to see if I'd be interested in, I guess, kind of moving things up a notch. And they look after like one or two other poets, but also some kind of bands. I thought, well, you know, it's good. I mean, I think one of the issues in terms of relying on poetry as my job, of course, is earning money. While having books that sell pretty well is helpful, I need other ways to make money in the course of the year. And you don't get that much money from turning up at a literary festival, and you get no money from doing a bookshop appearance, although you might have to sell a few books. But so these are a bit different. So these are, you know, proper shows in theatres. I guess I've been regarding them, although I do feel slightly overawed by the events I'm going to be doing later in the year. I think one of the helpful things about them is it takes the pressure off the writing a little bit. If I wasn't doing them right now, I'd be sat here thinking, I've got to get another book together. I've got to get something off to my agent, so get off to a publisher. And that's generally, I do kind of struggle sometimes under that sort of pressure.
Yeah. And what's it been like? Is it like the, you know, on the road, staying in boarding houses, you know, terrible landladies, all that stuff?
Well, it's not really quite got off in earnest. It sort of starts really in September, although I've done a few dates. But I did do a festival a normal festival in Glasgow on Friday, and I did have the experience of being on trains for 11 and a half hours on Friday, being 2.5 hours late for my events as a result, thanks to delay. So that was slightly worrisome. But the way that the tour works, hopefully I won't have any such kind of long train journeys. It'll be a bit more kind of, you know, rooted around the country.
Yeah. And when you get there, how do you find audiences are responding to you?
Well, generally quite good, because most people haven't seen me before. The jokes that I make night after night are at least fresh for them, if not for me. It's good because, you know, people who come want to be there, and, you know, they've followed me on online. I'm doing a few other events where, like the music festival and things like that, where I might have audiences who are less familiar with me, so I'm imagining those might be a very different experience. But the events themselves are great, and it's really good to see, I think, the kind of range of different ages in the audience too, from teenagers through to people in their 80s and 90s. It's just incredible, really.
Where you performed in Walthamstow, our local comedy club, they're sometimes in there, or they're sometimes in the nearby pub that's got a little theatre. And the organiser, she took a big risk. She put on a comedy night which was all poetry.
Oh.
And it was brilliant. It was really brilliant. But people from my poetry group were like messaging me and going, oh, you went, what was it like? You know, could it have worked? But I suppose, like you, the people who chose to go to that night, you know, they weren't going to see, I know, Julian Clary or Barry Pryor or whatever. We'd gone with that particular flavour in mind, and it just worked so well. It was really good. So I think that might be something that moves forward, something on the way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I just, there are a few of those kind of things that do happen now, and it's quite a good space for people who like that stuff, you know. And I think there are a few people out there, you know, writing funny poems, and actually, like a few of the venues where I'm playing in the autumn are actually comedy clubs. And I did something in Newcastle, did in February, which was a comedy club, and it was a bit, you know, just there with a mic stand and like an audience kind of around you, wanting to be entertained and wanting to laugh. Yeah, it does kind of, well, at least my stuff does seem to work.
Yeah,
pretty okay in that sort of environment.
And what about the music festival? How do you feel when you come on to warm up the audience before a band, or to come between bands?
Well, I think I think fortunately they keep the spoken word, or whatever they're calling it, separate stage to the bands. So I think that the prospect of being a warm up for a band is really quite a difficult one.
I was thinking John Cooper Clarke or Simon Hegley, because that's what they did, you know, yeah. as kind of punk poets, wasn't it? That they would be on to warm the audience up.
Yeah,
warm them up is a rock, you know. Yeah, it's entr'acte.
I did. I mean, it does still happen. I did go to a gig last year where they had, it was like a sort of punkish band, and they had a poet on beforehand. Mm. Yeah, I think it is quite tough in that environment.
You said about different, like, you know, exploring different genre and different form. When you sit down with that blank page, do you say, right, I'm going to write a limerick now, or I'm going to write a list poem, or whatever it is that's in your head?
No, not often. I mean, well, I suppose, there is a difference between, like a big difference between the mindset of writing a haiku and writing something maybe more just sort of free form. So at least at the very least, I tend to have an idea as to what kind of job lies in front of me. And, you know, I might have like a brief thought, which I think, oh, that's just a little funny phrase. That's kind of just nice to pop in a little poem, maybe a haiku or something like that. But if it's a bigger idea, then I sit there and play around with words. And at some stage it starts to coalesce or form, and whether that then forms into something, triggers a rhyme that I really like, and I head off kind of down that route, or whether I've just got a particular line or phrase that makes me mix it into some other kind of poem, then I don't really know till I start writing it.
That's actually a brilliant answer, because you've covered loads of things there about going off down routes with different, you know, that's quite often you have, I will have a line in my head and I just think, oh, where's it going to come? And then eventually you have to build a nest to put it in, don't you?
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, one thing with my days like these, where I've got those 366 poems in it, I suppose I was conscious of mixing things up a lot. You know, I didn't want just one kind of poem to keep reappearing. And I think as a consequence, I was really thinking quite hard about things like form and structure. I tried to do that anyway. And often when I started on social media, I used to do a lot of that, of, I guess, writing poems in slightly unconventional ways. You know, there might be in a Venn diagram, or in a sort of Excel spreadsheet, or those kind of things. So I wanted that kind of variety for the book, because I'm not that I expect anyone just to sit down and read it from cover to cover. It's not really that kind of book. But all the same, I wanted, you know, each day's poem to be different from the previous days.
Thank you to Brian Bilston for being the subject of this month's interview. If you've enjoyed this chat with Brian, we'll be sharing some of his poetry in our August listener contribution. You can find out more about Brian by visiting his website at brianbilston.com. We're always delighted to read your contributions. So if you'd like to see your words in Write On or hear them on this podcast, please get in touch. We'll share this link and all others mentioned in today's podcast as part of our show notes. I've been Tiffany Clare, and you've been listening to Write On Audio. Write On Audio is produced by Chris Gregory, and it's an alternative stories production for Pen to Print. This podcast is supported using public funding by Arts Council England.